So in 1950, Enrico Fermi, the nuclear physicist, asked a very simple but very profound question. He asked, "Where are they?" The they in his question is extraterrestrial intelligent life forms, intelligent life on some other planet than the Earth, extraterrestrial intelligence. "Where are they?" simply asks if there are other forms of intelligent life in our galaxy or beyond our galaxy in the observable universe, why haven't we detected them? Why isn't there evidence for them? Why haven't our old episodes of I Love Lucy, broadcast from our Earth, passed their old episodes of their old TV sitcoms coming in? Why is it that everywhere we look, using all the different modes of detection that we have available to us, we don't see evidence in decades of trying that we are anything but alone? Where are they? The universe is a very big place. Astronomers estimate that there are 100 to 400 billion stars in our Milky Way galaxy, and there are about 100 billion galaxies in the observable universe, billions and billions, as Carl Sagan used to say, of places where intelligent life could exist. We know there are planets around some of those stars, and some of those planets are Earth-like enough that they could support life. And if life gets started somewhere, it seems likely that eventually an intelligent life would evolve, just as it did here. That might take a while, but the universe is over 13 billion years old, so there's plenty of time. And then eventually, it's only one more small step to assume that at least some of that intelligent life out there would get sufficiently technologically advanced that they could start doing some things that we could detect, like inventing televisions and broadcasting sitcoms into space. Now, that's a long string of probabilities, but even if all of those probabilities are very small, very rare, almost never happens, when you start with 100 to 400 billion possible stars just in our galaxy alone, and then multiply that by 100 billion galaxies, and give yourselves a 13 billion year time span, well, you can probably do about anything. Even a very rare event becomes very possible. We're here, after all. So we know it's possible for intelligent life to exist in the universe. Wouldn't it seem almost unfathomably unlikely that in all those billions of possibilities, we are the only ones? Indeed, when you put it that way, a lot of people are quick to affirm, well, of course, we are not alone. Absolutely. Intelligent life must be out there. It would be arrogant to assume otherwise. We can't possibly be that special. But there's Fermi's paradox. Logically, extraterrestrial intelligent life must exist. But observationally, we have no evidence for it. So as Enrico Fermi asks, where are they? In 1961, about 10 years after Fermi asked his question, another man named Frank Drake attempted to quantify all of the variables that are implicit in assessing the likelihood of extraterrestrial intelligence. He came up with a string of variables multiplied together in the form of an equation, the result being a number that would tell us the probability for the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence. Here is what Frank Drake said we would have to know. First, we would want to know the average rate at which new stars are formed, then how many of those stars have planets, then how many of those planets are suitable for life. So far, so good, because we have pretty good estimates for all of those. And the trend line since 1961 has actually been getting consistently better for the odds of extraterrestrial intelligent life. We used to think that habitable planets are fairly rare. Better observations in the last few years say that Earth-like planets in the habitable zone, meaning the right distance from the parent star in order for the existence of liquid water, are pretty common. Astronomers estimate that about 20% of stars are like our sun, and about 20% of those have habitable planets orbiting them. That gives us a lot of likely planets, at least 4 billion in just our galaxy. In fact, the closest habitable planet outside our solar system is only 12 light years away. Then it gets trickier. Once you know how many planets you're talking about, then the Drake equation asks you to fill in the number of planets where life emerges, then the number of planets where intelligent life evolves, and then the number of planets with intelligent life who are sufficiently intelligent to develop the technology that would make them deliberately or accidentally detectable to interstellar communication. And finally, you would need to know, given that all the other conditions are happily met and you actually have an intelligent life form capable of interstellar communication, how long are they likely to last in that fortunate state? The problem with the Drake equation is that the first three elements can be known fairly accurately, but the final four elements are completely unknowable. How many planets have life? Well, we're the only one we know about so far, so your guess is as good as mine. How many planets with life have intelligent life? Well, we know exactly one example so far. It's us. How many intelligent life forms are capable of interstellar communication? Well, just one so far. It's us. So your guess is as good as mine. And how long do those civilizations last? Well, human beings have been broadcasting radio messages since the early 20th century. We've lasted a little over 100 years at that level of technological capacity. How much longer will human beings continue to be around? Well, your guess is as good as mine. The problem with the Drake equation is that once you get past the first three elements, which are fairly objective and knowable, you get to four elements that are pretty entirely unknowable and subjective. So the problem is that what numbers you plug into the Drake equation after the first three elements is pretty much based on your personal bias. The Drake equation attempts to answer the question, how likely is extraterrestrial intelligent life, by giving you an equation that requires you to plug in guesses based on your preconceived answer to that same question. If you're optimistic about the likelihood of extraterrestrial intelligence, you'll plug in optimistic numbers. If you're pessimistic, you'll plug in pessimistic numbers. And then, because all of those numbers get multiplied together, the final answers that people get from the equation can vary by several orders of magnitude. Frank Drake's original estimate from 1961 is that there should be somewhere between 1,000 and 100 million advanced civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy. Where are they? Indeed. By the way, Frank Drake is a pretty interesting guy. He worked with Carl Sagan to design the plaques that were mounted on the Pioneer spacecrafts and also those golden records that were on the Voyager space probes, which are meant to document life on Earth to any space alien who happens to pick them up somewhere out there. So the Fermi paradox is that it seems at first thought that extraterrestrial intelligence should be fairly likely. But our objective evidence so far is that extraterrestrial intelligence doesn't exist at all. So people have spent the last 70 years attempting to resolve the paradox. And that was the interesting question that I wanted to explore when I first put this sermon on my preaching schedule. They must be out there. We're looking for them. So why haven't we seen them? Where are they? Well, one answer might be that they don't want to be seen. This is a common theme in science fiction, right? The Galactic Federation has decided that Earthlings are not suitable to join the team. Usually the reason is that we're too dangerous, we're too warlike, And so the Galactic Federation knows we exist, but for their own protection, they have set up some kind of a communication shield around our planet that protects us from knowing about them until such time as they decide we are sufficiently ready to join the peaceful universal community. We're like a planetary toddler in a cosmic timeout. We're being monitored by more advanced civilizations to ask whether we're going to grow up or destroy ourselves first. Now, that destroy ourselves first is actually a different gloomy answer to the Fermi paradox. What if the reason that there are no extraterrestrial intelligent civilizations out there is that every time a species develops the technology necessary for interstellar communication, that same level of technological advancement also always results in the civilization destroying itself? Enrico Fermi articulated the Fermi paradox in 1950 when he was working at Los Alamos to develop the hydrogen bomb. At the point where our science has advanced to the point where we might start to wonder about interstellar communication, he noticed we were using that science to develop a hydrogen bomb that might kill us all. Maybe that's just the universal rule. Sufficiently high technology to reach the stars always creates its own demise before we actually do reach the stars. That answer to the Fermi paradox is known generally as the great filter. The great filter assumes that every other element of the Drake equation makes intelligent life possible. Lots of stars, lots of planets, life getting formed all the time, intelligent life evolving naturally, but every life form of sufficient intelligence eventually reaches a filter that stops them from evolving any further and either sends them back to the Stone Age or wipes them out altogether. And that kind of answer pertains to the last of the variables in that long Drake equation. How long do sufficiently advanced civilizations last? We've only been deliberately looking for extraterrestrial intelligence for about 60 years. Maybe they were around earlier and we missed them. Or maybe we're ahead of the game and we need to wait a few years or a few thousand years or a few tens of thousands of years for the next civilization out there to show up. But none of these possible solutions to the Fermi paradox really satisfy. The problem with all of these solutions is that they all exchange one unlikely scenario, that we are the only intelligent life in the universe, with other unlikely scenarios. Take that Galactic Federation, for instance. How likely is it, really, that all of the other intelligent civilizations in the universe found each other, agreed to cooperate with each other, and all agreed that they would develop a perfect communication blackout with the Earth? Well, you could say it's likely or it's not likely, but in either case, you are speculating about alien sociology of which you have absolutely zero actual knowledge. And that's good enough for science fiction, but it's not good enough for, you know, science. Or take that early or late developers scenarios. What's the likelihood that alien intelligence is common, and out of all of those other civilizations, we happen to come in dead last? Or uncontested first? Well, you might say it's likely or it's not likely, but in either case, there's no real reason to accept the improbability of those scenarios as any better than the improbability that we are actually the only intelligence in the universe. And so the Fermi paradox has fascinated and persisted for about 70 years now, since Enrico Fermi first articulated it. Resolving the paradox has proved impossible. Why is it that extraterrestrial intelligence ought to be common, and yet we don't see it at all? Where are they? And then, just last month, literally a few weeks after I put this sermon title on my worship calendar, it's true, a group of scientists at Oxford published a paper that does not resolve the Fermi paradox, but dissolves the Fermi paradox, as they say. They say there really isn't a paradox at all. A paradox, you know, is when you hold two ideas both true, but in conflict with each other. By logic, extraterrestrial intelligence ought to exist. By observation, extraterrestrial intelligence doesn't exist. If both of those are true, you have a paradox. The Oxford scientists say the paradox is dissolved when we show that actually extraterrestrial intelligence is not likely. Our first thought, best guessed, is wrong. By their calculations, it is entirely plausible that we are the only intelligent species capable of interstellar communication in the galaxy, or even in the entire observable universe. So when we look up and see nothing, there's no reason to be surprised. There's no paradox to solve. Where are they? Well, who are you talking about? We are it. What the scientists did was to go back to that Drake equation. They plugged in the current best estimates we have for the first three elements of the equation, the ones that are fairly objective and knowable, and getting more optimistic all the time, by the way. But then for the next four, they did two things. First, they made their own best guesses based on research of prior papers on the subject over the last 70 years. But they also included a factor that represents the uncertainty of their estimates, turning their specific guesses into probability ranges, and therefore trying to overcome the biasness of all the other numbers. Then they did the same thing a second time with no guesses of their own at all, but simply using all of the previous guesses discovered in their research as the probability range. Then they subjected the resulting data to a Monte Carlo analysis. It's a fun name, but it's a real thing. This is a method of computational analysis that runs large numbers of random samples from data sets that contain a high amount of variability. If you've ever followed some of the predictions that Nate Silver does at 538, it's the same thing. He's running Monte Carlo analysis. You basically take data points at random from all of these large probability fields, and then you just keep the computer running until it has done hundreds of thousands of possible combinations. So there's obviously a lot of math in the paper, but here is the bottom line. The authors conclude that there is a 52% probability that we are alone in our galaxy, and a 38% probability that we are alone in all of the observable universe. Furthermore, when the authors update their initial run based on the Drake equation to include the actual observations we have of alien intelligence, which is none so far, the probability that we are alone expands. In the galaxy, a range of 53% to 99.6% probability that we are alone. Almost certainly alone. In the observable universe, a range of 39% to 85% probability that we are alone. The paradox dissolves. There is no paradox. Finding no evidence of alien intelligence is exactly what we would expect, or at least there's a high probability of that outcome. So there's no explanation required. We seem to be alone because we are, in fact, probably alone. So, I don't know how that makes you feel. No explanation required, but perhaps some theology is required. What would it mean for us to be alone in the universe? What would that cosmic solitude do to our spirits? What if over my head there were nothing but stars and planets, and maybe some kind of life on some of those planets, but probably on none of them, anyone looking up with the kind of wonder and speculation that we earthlings do? Sure, we come from the stars, but what if out of all of those billions and billions of stars, only we swam up from the sea, stood up on the land, and reached back to the sky with longing? In my 20 years of ministry, I've never had occasion to sing the hymn that we just sang before my sermon, Children of the Human Race, and now I question whether its simple assurance that we aren't alone in the universe might just have been proved an unjustified hope. Most human religions begin from the premise that humanity has a privileged place in the cosmic order. We are the receivers of God's special attention and work and love. We are the chosen people. Jesus came to us. Only enlightened humans can escape the cycle of rebirth. Most religions claim among life on earth, only humanity participates in any kind of a salvation story and have nothing to say at all about possible life beyond earth. That always seemed incredibly arrogant to me. Unitarian Universalism emphasizes the interdependent web of all existence. We're universalists, after all. Human existence is merely a part of the system that includes all. We follow the science that shows us how connected we are to other life forms. Not a special creation, but a fellow organism with swallows and snails and whales. Christianity was struck to its core when Copernicus said the earth wasn't at the center of creation. Unitarian Universalists are happy to accept our place as residents of a minor planet circling a small star on the outside of a lesser arm of a run-of-the-mill spiral galaxy called the Milky Way, itself just one of 100 billion galaxies flung across infinite space. It's not about us, we're happy to say. But what then if it is? What if we do have a privileged place in the universe? Could our religion survive humanity being shoved back into the center the way that Christianity survived Copernicus's shove out of the center? We've learned to be so humble about our commonplace in the universe. What if instead we need to accept the responsibility of being caretakers of an extremely precious status? I imagined when I programmed this sermon that I would wrestle with that idea of the great filter, the idea that civilizations that achieve great scientific advancement inevitably risk destroying themselves by their own achievements. Instead, I face a prospect that's even more daunting. At least if we're not alone in the universe, if we do end up destroying ourselves, we could still imagine that somewhere, sometime, some other civilization might at last be able to avoid the great filter and survive. If not us, someone, somewhere, maybe. But if we are the only ones, then the responsibility to get this right becomes not just a wishful hope, but a solemn, solemn duty. Our advanced intelligence becomes not just a pleasant accident, a fun feature of this human life, but a precious birthright that we must respect and protect. That we might be it, alone in the universe, takes every principle of our faith and multiplies its importance by orders of magnitude. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. If we have failed to recognize the precious worth of every human being before, and the awesome responsibility to protect a planetary environment that supports intelligent life before, surely, surely, we must not fail to recognize it now. Thank you.